guys. I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. And tonight's guest is J.H. Fleming. Woo, woo,
woo.
And Philip Dreyer Duncan.
Woo.
All right, we don't have a guest. This is a very special episode, and it's a special episode for two reasons. For one, it's episode 42, so this episode is the answer to life and everything, which is appropriate because it's also a little bit of a celebratory episode in that by the time this comes to your ears, I will no longer be employed as a W-2 person thingy. I will be a full-time Woo. Author working for myself.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see on the
I'm
woo.
So jealous.
We'll wait and see on the woo. So we thought there's a couple of things. So one thing right out the gate, as we are undergoing these life changes, I have some things I need to take care of, and I thought it might be better if we take a little break from the podcast. So we're going to go on a little bit of a hiatus. Sorry, bummer, sad, I know. This will be the last episode for a couple weeks, probably, give or take. We'll see. We might change our minds. We reserve the right to change our mind at any point. We also reserve the right to never record another episode. So really, if you're listening to this, it's going to be a surprise. Surprise. All right. We thought we would do sort of like a mini Creatives Fire. This episode's going to be shorter than normal, but I wanted to talk about how we got here, how I got here, we collectively. Of course, JH is going to continue working for a little longer, but I thought it would be good to, you know, we've talked a lot in theory and given suggestions and things and even talked about investing and how we invest, but I thought it might be kind of fun to go through our timeline, our like sort of financial timeline, and how we ended up where I'm going, okay, today's the day. So I guess to start that off, we'll also do the news and the tools, but we're just going to do it in one big segment. You don't get any train ads either. Everybody calm down. This is episode 42, the answer to life and everything.
Life, the universe, and everything.
Life, the universe, and everything. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me on that.
You're welcome.
You have never shy about correcting me. All right. So one thing I thought I'd give an update on was the health insurance thing. I think I talked about that a little bit last week and how I was having some trouble. So this week I was able to get a hold of the sales rep again, guy, I don't know what the correct title is. And it looked like what I was going to get was going to be the best option. So it was like, let's just move this forward. And we applied and I got denied like almost instantly. And it was like, well, that's weird. I didn't think we did that today. And apparently we still do. Apparently there are two different types of insurance you can get. And it really only matters because, as I've learned the hard way, you can only start the plans that cannot be denied, like the federally mandated, they're in the marketplace sort of thing. Most of what I think self-employed people use today, those all have to start at the first of the month. So it would have been better for me to have left my job a week ago or at the end of this month. Surprise! Who knew? The other type of insurance is like the old school insurance where they can choose not to give you coverage. And they really, really want to. Like, I'm pretty healthy. I don't have any, like, really lingering major medical things.
I was just going to add, we're talking about U.S. health insurance. So if you're listening another country, obviously yours is going to be completely different. But if you're in the U.S., then yes.
If you're in Canada or Ireland and you get that sweet, whatever you call it, we don't even know what to call it over here, where you just get to go to the doctor and you don't get a bunch of bills and craziness. That's nice. You can zone out for this portion or just consider this the first like horror episode of the podcast. So basically, if you want to get this other type of insurance, which can start on any date, they'll go through your medical history and they'll be like, oh, did you have a boo-boo on your knee when you were in the fifth grade because you fell down? Yeah, we don't think that's considered a what is it, an existing condition or whatever, we're going to deny you. I mean, it's probably not that extreme, but they found something in mine that they didn't like, and they were like, I don't know, maybe they're like, you're fat. No, I don't know. Who knows? the bad part is I got the rep back on, and they were super nice and called the insurance company with me on the line. They're like, hey, basically they were like, hey, bruh, why you deny our thing, bruh? And the insurance people was like, I don't know, bruh. I can't tell you that. I mean, I know we did it, but I can't tell you why we did it. That's basically how that went down. And so they were like, let's try something different. And we ended up going the, I don't know, marketplace route, and they were super helpful. So again, this was the company who Sifwa partnered with to try to get us some insurance opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the next sales rep I spoke to, she was very awesome, and she took very good care of me, and we got it all squared away. But that's what I learned about health insurance. If you're going to quit your job, it's better to do it at the end of the month, not the first week of the month, because I don't know what insurance looks like. I don't know when my employer insurance will get cut off after I'm terminated on Friday.
Yeah. So either plan your exit at one of those dates or be prepared to not have insurance for a few weeks.
Yeah. Ultimately, though, what I ended up going with still kept me a couple $100 under budget a month. So it's all right. It's not great. I'll try to get something better and when open enrollment comes back around, but mm-hmm. it'll do for now. It'll take care of me if I have any major issues.
Yeah. I was also going to add, obviously, I haven't gone through this yet, but I did look at, I have like just periodically, I'll look at some stuff because I want to try to plan ahead and see what's out there and know like, okay, what would it look like? Because like I said, I have a magic spreadsheet, but I need to be able to know what those numbers are to test it out and see if it works, right? So I am, I mentioned before, I am a freelance editor on Fiverr, and they actually have a sort of similar thing with a site called Stripe or Stride. I don't know, one of those. Anyway, my point is, so if you have any sort of freelance work you do, whether that's editing or ghostwriting, or you do graphic stuff or you do tech stuff, whatever it is that you're a freelancer for, you would have some additional options with that. There's also the Freelancers Union. So if you're in a state where that's supported, you can also try to get help that way, as far as, you know, making sure you have coverage.
Yeah. And I think there's some other things. I'll do a little bit more research before we come around to the end of the year as well and see if we can't come up with even some better options, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of just keeping all of this in my mind because I know it will be coming, even though I've got more time than you do, but like, I definitely want to compare all of them.
Yeah. I will say though, I wasn't in love with the first guy I spoke to that because he just wasn't very responsive and I had a hard time getting back to him. But the second person I spoke to, she was really good and answered all my questions and was like very on top of making sure she's even supposed to. She might have already. I missed a call today. She even said she was going to call in a few days to make sure I was all good and set up and had everything I needed. Good. So that was cool.
Awesome.
All right, so that's the major thing there, and it really is a major thing for transitioning to self-employed. The insurance stuff is a nightmare. We need to find some people who are self-employed in Missouri who can maybe tell us what they do. But anyways, yeah, enough about health insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I said I wanted to talk a little bit about how we got to here and how it was a possibility. It's sort of my history with working is sort of interesting in that I grew up in a family that had a business, so I was working from the time, like I can remember being a little kid waddling around and being told I needed to pick up nails. And I even had, I don't know what the, what's the term for when something's too far out to be prosecutable? I can't think of what it's, what the term, not term of limitations, but
statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations. Pretty sure it'd be up on this at this point, but I had a job in a box factory when I was in the fifth grade, I believe. I don't think I've ever said that on the podcast before. I was telling somebody the other day and they were like, for real? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, we used to go into this. My buddy and I would get dropped off at this box factory right after it would close. And as soon as all the employees were gone, they would lock us in there and turn off all but one light. So it looked like it was closed and we would work in the evenings. That may or may not be true, government. I don't know. The good news is, if you want to find out who, I could not tell you what the factory was. I couldn't tell you who the person was at this point. But
did you get paid?
Oh yeah. We got paid. we were making partitions. So like really easy to make. And I think they were like way behind on their orders for them. And so, yeah, that's how I bought my first little Walkman CD player, building partitions.
Their solution was child labor.
Get it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a true story. Or it may not be. I can't say for sure. If it was true, it was a blast. I had a lot of fun, except for when my hand would get stuck in the machine.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding. My hand never got stuck in the machine.
I was going to say, I've worked in workers' comp. I know of a guy who lost his arm in a machine.
If this was a true story, if it were true, there was this machine and you would take like 20 partitions and push them together in a pile and then walk up to this machine and it would zip tie. You'd stick one in and it would zip tie. And if this were a true story, we might have once or twice been like, stick our hands in there and see what happens.
Gosh,
we're fifth graders. We're irresponsible.
Wow.
If this were real, if this were real, we probably shouldn't have been left there unsupervised in this factory. I don't know. Bought my first CD Walkman.
It's amazing you're alive.
Like you've known me long enough to know all of the "it's amazing you're alive" stories.
I'm saying. Yeah, I'm saying cumulatively out of everything, this included, it's amazing you're alive.
Yeah. I've done a lot of dumb things.
Wow.
Any hizzle. So I'm not really here to talk about my child labor days. although I do think that, you know, we talk about like, you know, advantages people have. I think I actually had some advantages in that. Growing up, working was like a part of life, right? Like my spring breaks were going to my grandparents' museum and we're all going to spend the week cleaning the 30 buildings in their museum, right? Like, that's how I grew up. So never really shied away from it. And I entered the adult workforce in 2005. And so I guess that's 19 years ago, if I can math correctly. I've been collecting a W-2. I've been a W-2 employee for 19 years. I've been collecting a paycheck every 2 weeks for 19 years. Even when I switched companies and stuff, I still never missed a paycheck. So this is going to be weird in that regard. But I wouldn't say I got very serious about the saving and investing where we could start looking at this till about 10 years ago, probably. Maybe even less than 10 years, maybe more like 8.5, 9. How long have we been together?
How long do you think?
I don't know. Don't do this to me on the podcast. They're all going to hear Julie Jones is going to punch me.
Oh, gosh.
Becca's going to throw shit at me. Tracy's going to Judy chop me.
We got together in 2016, and you didn't start this until after Hawk was let go, which was like 2017, 18, somewhere in there.
Early 2017. Okay. Yeah. So if we go to that point, that's probably where I'd start from. And I'd say that at that point, I was still paying on my car. So I still had a car. In fact, I'd only had the car for a couple of years at that point. I had a no interest loan for a lawnmower. That was a fun situation. It doesn't matter. I'm even going to go into the lawnmower story. That's dumb. Nobody cares. I think that was the only debt I had at the time was my car and the lawnmower. And then we had your apartment. Mm-hmm. And then you had some things.
Yeah. I was just going to say I had so I got a new vehicle in 2016 because the one I had prior was having all sorts of issues and it was just time for a different vehicle. So I ended up with the car payment. And then from the move, because I did live in Arkansas, moved to Missouri, and just like some moving debts and then like trying to get like situated and everything. We ended up eating out like all the time at that point. So I accumulated some debt from that as well.
Yeah, we hadn't really learned what we needed to learn then. So in fairness, right, at that point, I was still pretty good about not carrying a balance on my credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the other two bits of debt. And then you had the expensive apartment. Mm-hmm. And once we figured this out, I think we did have some advantages. And I've had people, even like close friends, kind of get mad at me and be like, well, you just blah. That's why you were able to do this. So I'll just be honest about what those were. So when I started this, when I started really saving and starting to figure this stuff out, at that point, I had, I want to say, $34,000 in a 401k. And that was what I'd collected over the course of my whole career, which is not a lot for a 401k. One of the best pieces of advice I got several years back was from one of my dad's best friends, and it was about taking my match for my 401k. And at the time, things were like really tight. This is kind of early in my career. And he was like, are you getting your 6% match? And I was like, no. And he's like, you're an idiot. That's stupid. You're throwing away free money. And so that made me feel bad. So I switched to 6% and I made sure and got that the rest of the way through, which is why at that point I had what I did have. So 34K in a 401k, I had maybe a couple of grand in savings, something like that. And then I still had a car I was paying on. And I had this lawnmower. So the lawnmower, I always just paid the basic loan price because, like I said, it was a zero interest loan. So it didn't really matter. And then on the car, I was actually paying double payments every month to the principal. But mm-hmm. Or no, I guess every month I would pay my normal payment and then I'd pay half of another payment to the principal. So every 2 months I paid full car payment to the principal. And that's what I was doing at that time. And then, yeah, when my boss got laid off and I was like, oh, this could be me and I need to prepare so that if this ever happens, I can take a stab at writing. I actually at that point stopped paying double payments on the car and but I still paid myself that extra amount, but I just put it in savings so I'd have enough built up that if I did lose my job, I could make the payments for several months because that was kind of a sticking point, right? And then I think the next thing we did, which was smart, was we got rid of your expensive apartment, which I think was like mm-hmm. right around $1,000 a month.
No, it was 1,400.
That was at the end. The normal before you got over the lease, it was 12. It went up for the last couple of months because you were past the lease and you hadn't renewed. Doesn't matter. It was a lot.
That much. Yeah, it was an expensive apartment for this area. I mean, it's probably average now, but so I say that coming from my very first apartment was $300 a month in Fort Smith, Arkansas. So yes, the 1400 in comparison was way more expensive.
Yeah. Either way, it was well over $1,000 and it was expensive.
Yeah.
I want to say maybe 1200 is what you're paying before the lease went up. Anyway. So one of the smart moves we made was we moved into a duplex because at the time both of us were working in a different town than we're at now. So we moved into this duplex and we were able to get it for $750 a month, which saved us quite a bit of money there. Mm-hmm. That's when I started a new job and I took at the time that 401k and I gave it to a financial planner thinking that was going to be a smart move. It wasn't long after that as I was dinking around and kind of trying to figure things out that another of my dad's best friends gave me some of the best advice I ever got, which I was bragging to him like, yeah, I went to this financial advisor and moved my 401k thinking he would be like, good job, pat on the head. And he goes, that's stupid. Why would you do that? You're smart. You can figure out how to do this stuff on your own. It's really easy. And I was like, oh, really? And he goes, yeah, investing is super simple. You're wasting your time with a financial advisor. You don't need that. You're smart enough to figure out how to do it on your own. And so I did. And that's where I started learning about the investments and blah, blah, blah. So from there, you know, we were coming into a place where I think by the time we were at the duplex, I probably paid off my car pretty quickly at that point. And then the lawnmower wasn't far off. And at that point, I was completely debt free. And we just still had some of hers that we were working through. And so the biggest advantage from that standpoint and the thing that, you know, most when my friends want to not really my friends, but I've got a little bit of pushback before on my stuff that, well, you just did it because X. And the you just did it because X is that we took over my dad's spare house and yeah. We had no rent at all. That was free to us. So at that point, now I'm living with, oh, she's pausing me.
I was just going to add, because when you say, oh, my dad's spare house, it makes him sound like he's super rich, when in reality, so when he says that, it sounds like, you know, his dad has a spare house and that makes it sound like he's just like super rich or something.
Money right? bags.
But
Papa money bags.
But in reality, so when they got this place, when I first met him, so the property had a house on it, but it was super old. Like it's over 100 years old. They made
from
it
1914.
Livable. Yeah. They made it livable and lived in there. And then they built his dad his own house from the ground up on the same property. And so once that was done, his dad moved into that house. And then when we left the duplex, we moved into the super 100-year-old other house.
Little tiny house.
Yes. So yes, it's a spare house, but it's not anything fancy. We can't even live in it right now because it's trying to kill Phil.
Yeah, but that's a nice story for not now. Yes. Right. So that was, yes, that was a major advantage I had in that I didn't have to pay rent. It saved, you know, $1,000 a month, basically, give or take. Or maybe 1500 if depending on prices and if we'd had to move again or whatever. That was probably, yes, that was a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that helps save. But the reality is I, when people say that to me, I feel like it's sort of a cop out too. It's sort of like, oh, you were only able to do it because, but you know, $1,000 a month is 12 grand a year. Yes, that's a lot of money. I was saving significantly more than that, right? So that was, you know, it wasn't nothing. Yes, it was an incredible factor that gave us an advantage, but it's not the whole picture. It's not even close to the whole picture. Because during this time, you know, from 2017? So from that point, once we sort of figured this stuff out, we actually just kept reducing our expenses. So we were going and eating out less, and we were buying less dumb stuff. And we just kept reducing our expenses till that our living was very, very cheap. And in the time since then, I've had four or five significant promotions. But all of that kept feeding back into this dream of we don't want to work day jobs forever, right? Mm-hmm. So that became more important to us.
I was going to add with that, with the reducing expenses and not buying dumb stuff. For me, we've talked about this before. It was kind of getting rid of like the impulse buys and then deciding like the things we do want to get, kind of planning for that rather than spur of the moment stuff.
Yeah.
So like for me, obviously I love books and I love video games, but instead of just, you know, something comes out and I want it and immediately getting it, well, now it's like, okay, I'll add it to my wish list. And then the next time I have some spending money and I want to get something, I'm going to pick something from my wish list. So like it's more planned and controlled and not just random spur of the moment. And now I've spent $500 this month just on all these books and games.
Right.
It's kind of like I'm still getting the things I want, but not uncontrollably, if that makes sense.
Right. And so I guess I would kind of explain too, like, so at this point, and I've changed my direction on things a lot from my, like every 2 months, I'm like, I'm going to replan how I'm investing. I don't know why I do that. It's dumb. You probably shouldn't do that. But So I'm not going to try to cover each version of everything I did, but I will just say, so starting in that back, you know, going again back to 2017. So we're paying things down and we're working towards cheaper living expenses and yada, yada, yada. I dinked around with stocks a little bit, like picking stocks, and that was dumb. That totally didn't really work for me like what I wanted to. So I started at that point investing in broad-based index funds like we've talked about before. I made my first IRA myself. I did a Roth IRA, and I started funding that pretty aggressively. My 401k at the time, instead of just taking the 6% match, I bumped that up to 10, 15, 20. Basically, what I was trying to do every year was max out both of them to like the legal limit if I could, just because that put it in more sheltered accounts. At the same time, I also made a brokerage. Actually, I made multiple brokerages across different places for different purposes. So I won't go too deep in that. But I, you know, like I continued paying myself a car payment, which went into a brokerage account to pay for future cars, things like that. But basically most of my investments, even up to today, I would say probably 95% are either in like the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index fund or the VTSAX mutual fund version. And it seems like I bought some of the VDC consumer goods. I don't remember what the proportions are to each other. And I still have some individual stocks for companies, you know, like I have, well, I've collected some Walmart stocks over the last year, a little bit of Google, Apple, things like that, right? But it's very small compared to just what, you know, what I did with the ground game of just investing in the broad-based stuff. So that's back where I started. And at the point when I started, it was like I'm buying a few here and there. Most of it was going into the 401k, right? Which didn't give me an option to invest necessarily where I wanted. I think the company I was with for most of that time, there was an S&P 500 option in the 401k that I pointed that stuff at. So then basically it's just been this slow game, right? It's a slow game of we were reducing our expenses, we were increasing our savings, and then we were investing that, we were getting all the debt paid off. And then I guess, you know, when we finally got all the debt paid off, then we were really amping up how much we were putting into investments and things. And that's really just the way it's continued. I also knew that when the time came, I would need a big runway. So an awful lot of money, I kept increasing how much of like a liquid savings I thought I needed. And when that started getting bigger, I was like, all right, what about a medical savings? What about a car savings? You know, can I have a savings that has as much as my deductible for my car? Things like that. And then, you know, we found banks with higher interest rates for savings accounts. So we did that. And it's just been a slow slog. And actually, probably a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, the number was at a place where it was like, I actually could potentially leave my job and make a run at it. But we just really, I think I really wanted to see that number get a little bit bigger, because what I didn't want to do was take a run like this and give it a few years and spend everything back down where I had to start from zero. So basically the way that our runway is set up right now is we'll have a pretty solid few years, let's just say a few years, where if we made absolutely nothing, we could turn around and we will only have spent about a third of the total. Mm-hmm. So that way, if we do have to go back to the workforce, we're not starting over at zero. And, you know, it would set us back on this path. I think if I had just stayed working, I think I had, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 years that we would hit a number where we definitely could have retired forever. But, and then now if I would have to go back, I'm going to lose the years where I'm not working, and then I'll have to, so it'd probably set me back 10 to 15. I think I'm willing at this point in my career to take that 5-year gamble.
Right. Yeah. I think for me, what's kind of changed is, ever since I switched to part-time work, my own kind of personal outlook has changed a little bit, especially since I got the new remote job. So I think if you can find some sort of remote work, like if you don't want to work full-time anymore so you can focus more on your writing, some sort of remote part-time work, that's been a game changer for me, because then I can take my work anywhere. I'm not, you know, having to go into an office and be around people I don't like. And if it's something that you love, then that's just like an added benefit. I don't feel like I'm wasting time every day at this job I hate. And I can take it with me anywhere. So if we want to go to a convention, if we want to go to some sort of writing retreat or whatever, I can just take that with me. So I definitely think it's worth keeping in mind. And Phil and I have talked about this too. Like if the worst happened and if, you know, 5 years from now we have to go back to the workforce, the temporary work through like the temp agencies is another really good option. I work for one right now, but my health insurance is covered through the temp agency for a part-time job, which is like, I've never heard of that before. So that's pretty amazing. Like, it's not super great insurance, but it's something.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about the possibility of having to go back. But here's the thing, right? And this is what I think is key, is the combination of things like knowing that we're not going to spend the full runway and living very, very cheaply as we do. It gives us way more options, right? So if the time comes where like things aren't going the way we want and we're it's like, I'm going to have to go get a job. Now I have choices. Like, I could go back and get a corporate high salary thing, or I could do that, right?
Yeah, that was my point, was that it means you don't have to go back to this horrendous job that you hate. Like, you can do other things and still be able to, you know, keep your writing and keep going with that. Because how many people do we know who have talked about their own day jobs and how much they hate them? And both of us have been in multiple jobs over the years. Yeah. And like this one remote one I have now is the only one I'm like, yeah, I could do this one. I really like this. All the others have just been like, either it's okay or I hate it. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I guess my point with all of that was there are other options that you can try to look into. And yes, I know there's some luck involved with that, but it is worth trying for.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're not like completely out of money, right? If you got some runway, try some things, right? I would, you know, here's the thing I've thought about even if I have to go back to work at some point. It's like I could do some really terrible jobs. Like I could do some like really awful jobs for a little bit. Like I could wait tables just to experience it and be able to write about it, right? Like, you know, like I want to go be a museum tour guide for a little bit or something, right? Like you could do all kinds of random things because you don't really need like, you're not really trying to like go after the biggest salary in this case, right? You're just going after what you need to survive. So
Because at that point you just need something that's steady and reliable, and then you spend the rest of your time working on your books. So if you know, a part-time job at a museum, or you want to wait tables, whatever that is, if that gives you that steady income so that you can go do what you love, then why not?
Yeah, you could even be like, what do I want the character in my next book to be? And you're like, oh, I want him to be fill in the blank. Like, I'm going to go try to get that job. You know, go see if I can get a job doing that. Or at least working next to it, depending on, you know, what kind of, if there's education requirements or whatever, you know, but.
Yeah. And then also keep in mind, like, that you're not stuck there. Because I think a lot of people end up in those sorts of situations where they feel like they're stuck. They can't leave. They don't have any other options. And I think approaching it in this other way where it's like, oh, if this doesn't work out, I'll just leave and find something else. You know, I think having that mindset is really crucial, regardless of if you're trying to write full time or not. I think that's better for approaching the workforce. And I know not everyone can, because some of them have additional responsibilities either with kids or they're stuck with debt, which is why we advocate to get rid of the debt as soon as possible so that you don't feel like you're trapped. But just something to keep in mind.
I haven't forgotten what that felt like. And I've said it before, so I won't go too far into it, but it is worth mentioning, right? It was that combination of things that were happening and kind of snowballing together, right? And I'm just going to repeat them again just to be annoying and to beat it like a dead horse. But it was the reducing our expenses so that we lived cheaper, being debt free, and saving and investing and watching the investments starting to compound and build, and all of those things together, that started to take away some of the fear I felt. Because I was in that position at one point, right? At one point in my adult career, I felt very trapped. I felt like I was never going to get out. And I kept applying for things and trying, and I kept getting told I just wasn't quite what they were. I was so close. I was a really good candidate, but I just wasn't quite it. Ironically, the first time I interviewed outside of the company I worked for, I got the job the first try, and they loved me, and they were like, we want him to come work with us. And that's what gave me my opportunity, but to leave and start moving up. But what sort of happened is, the less, you know, once the debt was erased, the lower our expenses, the higher our savings and investment, the more confident I started to feel. Mm-hmm. And the more I saw, like, this is a real path to do this. And along those same lines, I started promoting at my job. And I think that I very much think those things are connected. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like the writing fed the desire to find another path out. The other path out started building confidence in me where I was better at my day job. I like kind of made a full circle where everything kind of worked together and helped me elevate. But not anymore, because if you're listening to this, I am, I might have just made the worst decision of my life or the best one. We're going to find out. I've always been very somewhat risk averse. That's an interesting way to say that. I've always been pretty risk averse about my money and things. And this is a big move for me to make. It's a really big one. But I think we're super prepared and I think it's going to be okay.
Great. I agree.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I was going to add, so we talked about kind of preparation and what led up to this, but we kind of left out the most recent things that kind of made you pull the trigger.
Oh, right. Good call.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily that you want to go into like a whole lot of details. We've talked about how you think it might be specific to you, but just kind of in general, maybe.
Yes. No, I absolutely intended to do that. Okay. So again, we have to go through the list. So expenses really low, zero debt, lots of money saved and invested over many slow years of running this race like a turtle. And like I said, and that's actually where I was going. So I'm glad you brought me back around. So going into like a year ago, year and a half ago, maybe even closer to 2 years ago, it started like, hey, you know, it's kind of there. I kind of could. Worst case scenario, we'd be all right. And then over this last year, it continued to grow. The stock market kind of got back on into flow with what it was doing. Things went up. And so it was like, okay, I'm actually getting to a place where, and you know, the thing is JH could tell, like she always knows, like this corporate thing has been wearing on me for a long time. And at the very least, I need a break from it. And she's been trying to push me that direction for a while. But again, I've always been very risk averse. So with my money, so I've kind of powered through probably longer maybe than I should have. And in fairness to the role I'm leaving, I think it would have been more fair for them to have caught me a couple years earlier or something, you know. But anyway, so from a money standpoint, it was like, I think I could absolutely make a run at writing full time. But that still left a problem in that I didn't really have a solid way to make money as an author. How was I going to sell my books and stuff, right? I mean, that's the big problem we all have to solve. That's the name of the podcast, really, right? It's about how do we solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I started thinking about what are some things I need to do? What's something with my limited time that I could focus on in small batches and learn and sort of, for lack of a better term, automate, if you will. Not really automate because I'd still have to do things, but where they would be small amounts of effort for me to go do those things. And one of those was like learning how to do some of the ad things, right? So, and I've talked about it before a little bit. I learned a little bit about the AMS platform first. I still am learning, still trying to figure it out, but I kind of just got to a place where I could run some ads without completely losing my face. And the same with, you know, like the BookBub platform and then a few promos and things and kind of how to run up my countdown deal weeks and make those do some things. And I knew I had two new Blade Mage novels I was planning to publish this year, one of which is already out now, Rebel Medicine. Go buy it so I can eat something other than beans. And so I thought last fall, why don't I use a countdown deal before I put out those books and just kind of tinker with this ad stuff. And I'm still employed, so I can afford to lose a little bit of money or whatever. And much to my shock and dismay, the one I did over Christmas, it went pretty freaking well. I hit the bestseller. I hit number one in a few different categories in Amazon over those few days. And then, you know, it ended and I was like, okay, well, you know, I didn't make all my money back on that, but that's fun. And then something miraculous happened, and that was that I still don't fully comprehend, but my books continued selling. Not loads and loads, but I was getting sales every day, page reads every day. And that continued through, and I kept thinking, all right, that went into January, and I kept thinking mid-January, all right, it's about to drop off. And you'd start to see a dip. and be like, okay, yeah, they were coming back down to earth. It's finally ending. I'm going back to obscurity. And then the next day it would pop back up and there'd be a lot more cells again. It's like, I don't know what's happening here, but I like it. And that continued all the way through into March when I released the new book and did the next sale to see if I could replicate the results. And sure enough, I could replicate the results. And they're still, I mean, it's still selling today. March was my biggest month ever as an author. So you tie that, you know, now I've got a process that seems to be working that I think I can replicate and continue to replicate and build on. And I've got the money for a big runway. That's what makes right now makes sense as the time to give it a go.
Yeah.
So here we go. All right. So let's jump. We have a couple of little news things we wanted to do, and we were going to keep the episode short. So do you want to tell us about the Bologna Book Fair?
Bologna. It's Bologna.
That's what I wrote down in my notes was Bologna.
Yeah, so the Bologna Book Fair, this is in Italy, but it's actually one of the really big children's book fairs. It's about to start. So my employer, I've mentioned a few times, she's actually getting ready to head there this weekend and will be there next week. So by the time this episode airs, it will be going on.
Cue. Mine's really short. I've got an email from Atticus. One of the big things that people want from Vellum and Atticus both is more fonts. And, you know, it would have been really cool if I pulled up the email. So I'm just going to keep talking and pretend like I did. They sent an email from Atticus that they are adding 1,500 plus fonts. Why? Started burping in the middle of saying that. Gross. Atticus is adding 1,500 new fonts. So that's cool. We haven't looked at them yet.
Yeah.
They're integrating Google fonts is what it is. So I guess if it's a Google font, you can use it. I don't know.
Yeah. So you can use those anyway. I did that with my Music the Gathering novels. You can get the Google fonts, and so long as it has language in there that you can use it commercially, you can integrate that with Scrivener. Just upload it as one of the fonts on your computer, get it into Scrivener, and it's totally legal to use those. You might want to save the pages and the text that says you can use it just in case. But yeah, you can do that with those as well.
What?
It's just neat that with Atticus, it's already built in for you. So that's pretty cool.
J.H. Fleming, are you telling me that I need some kind of something to prove I have the right to use a certain font? I don't think we've ever talked about that on the podcast before.
Probably not. I mean, if it comes built into whatever software you're using, like if you're using Word or Pages or Scrivener, whatever, chances are like all of those are fonts you can use. But there are going to be some that if you want a special font, you will have to make sure you can use that.
So the lowdown here is that fonts are considered copyrighted work. Mm-hmm. I think copyright's the right term. So you're just like if somebody wants to use your book or your characters or something like that, they have to pay you for it. The same is true of fonts, believe it or not, if you didn't know that. When you said if it's in Microsoft, the only thing about that you still might want to be careful. I mean, if you're using Times New Roman, you're good.
Right. But, that's not saying it's mostly going to be okay. Unless you just pick a really random one that's obscure, you might want to double check.
You also want to make sure if you're using an older version of Word, it hasn't been removed and that they're no longer licensing it.
Okay. So the last one is, as of April 1st, Camp NaNoWriMo has started. So a lot of you know about National Novel Writing Month every November. If you're not part of the official website, you may not know that there are actually Camp NaNoWriMos as well. And those are typically, I think, April and July. I feel like it's just those two, but I don't know if I'm missing one.
No idea. I don't even know what Camp NaNo is.
Yeah, so it's very similar to NaNoWriMo, but the main difference is that the NaNoWriMo, the idea is you write 50,000 words on a novel in a month, right? That's the standard. And you can claim that you're going to be like the non-traditional, like, oh, I'm going to work on a short story collection instead, or I'm going to work on poetry, or I'm going to aim for a different word count. Camp NaNoWriMo is all about that. Like, you're deciding what you're working on, how many words, all of that stuff. So it's like, there's no standard the way there is for the November NaNoWriMo. That's kind of the main difference. And I think they actually have different websites. So the Camp NaNoWriMo website is separate from the NaNoWriMo website. So if you're interested in logging into forums and whatnot and participating in that.
Well, there you go. All right, cool. And for our tools segment that we're not breaking to go to, you were going to tell us a little bit about how you've been using Notion.
Yeah, so I've mentioned it before, but now that I've been using it for a few more months, I wanted to talk about it because kind of the game changer for me was when I discovered a couple templates on Etsy. So Notion, you don't have to, you know, buy anything if you don't want to. You can use it completely free if you choose, and you can build everything from the ground up exactly as you want it. But templates do exist, both within like Notion itself, you can find templates, but you can also find some really cool stuff on sites like Etsy, where other people have created these massive like databases that you can purchase and download into your Notion. And so the two I wanted to mention that were really big game changers for me, specifically the first one I'm going to talk about, I found one called Author Central for Notion. And this one's really focused on the business side of being an author. It has a massive like task management thing that you can get down onto like a day by day basis. You can look at the month, you can look at goals for your entire year. It's got like notes for your website. It's got your media kit, put your bio in there. You have like your own little notebook for just random notes you want to take, plan out your social media, your blog, your newsletter. It's just got all kinds of stuff already built in there for you. I haven't even touched some of it yet, but that one was kind of the one that made me decide, yes, I really like Notion. And the thing with the template is even when you get it, you can still customize it how you want. So like if you don't like certain colors that they used or the fonts or, well, not so much the fonts, there are only like a couple in Notion, but that's another story. Or the layout, for example, like you can still add and remove stuff if you don't want to use them. So that one, again, was Author Central for Notion, and the seller is Jen Terpstra. That's JenTerpstra on Etsy. And then the second one I mentioned was more on the craft side, and it is a book series Notion template. So this one is more about your world building, details about your characters, about your plots, all of that stuff. And that one's really cool as well and goes into a lot of detail. And again, you can customize it. You can add stuff. You can remove stuff if you don't want it, rearrange it however you want. That one's Book Series Notion Template, and it's by Writer's Guide. That's their shop name, is just Writer's Guide. But the cool thing is you can have several different dashboards in Notion. So I just have these side by side, and I can even have links from one to the other. So if I've got like my book media kit in my main Author Central, I can actually have a link to my world building stuff in the craft dashboard. So a lot of cool stuff you can do with it and just have them working together and talking to each other.
Yeah, you might have to show me more in the near future, and I might actually be willing to. JH has always got these really cool things that she wants me to get excited about and use. The whole time I've known her, like even before we were a couple, she always has these things that she gets really excited about. She wants me to use, but they're so complicated. Like she does so much stuff, and I'm just like, I don't want. Like I'm not gonna fill Excel cells out for the next 8 hours. No, thank you. I'll pass for now. I'm just gonna keep using OneNote.
Yeah, I should add, again, I mentioned my spreadsheet and how I can mess with those things, spreadsheets, for hours on end and be happy. So if you don't want a lot of stuff to mess with, it might not be for you, but still try
one
it out.
One spreadsheet to rule them all.
Yeah, but still, yeah, try it out. It's really cool. To me, it's worth it and keeps track of everything in one place, which is awesome.
Well, I guess that's an episode then, since we said we were going to keep it short. I probably shouldn't have been laughing for that. Now they're going to know something funny happened. Oh, well. I guess we didn't have to do the whole spiel. You know where to find us. You know what we look like. You know what our names are. We'll just leave it there. And yeah, here we go. Jumping into the great unknown and what I've been dreaming about for a long time. So yeah. Wish me luck.